All right, everybody, welcome to another RCFB Talk. This is Bob Akairi. I see my co-host is here, so I'm going to go ahead and invite him. It's been another week in the off-season, but it's always a good time to talk about college football. Let's see here. All right, JD, how you doing?
I am happy and I am relaxed. I am doing wonderfully. So, been off the last couple of weeks, been out on vacation visiting the 49th state. Absolutely beautiful country up in Alaska. Strongly recommend all y'all go up there at some point, but I am rested, I am happy, and I am ready to talk college football here in the off season.
Absolutely. And there's been a fair amount in the last week. One of those moments that actually made me amused was you know they confirmed, or at least someone followed up, and I'm impressed someone followed up. Someone followed up with Jim Mora about whether he really did tell Najee Harris whether he knew who killed Tupac Shakur, and our astute folks at RCFB noticed the way he phrased it. Doesn't say that he doesn't know who killed Tupac, but rather that he never told anyone that he knew who killed Tupac. The question was in the transcript. Last question, a couple of months back, someone claimed Najee Harris said when you were recruiting him that you could tell him who killed Tupac. So I got to ask who did it? And his answer was, I have no idea where that came from. I certainly never said that. So that was probably my favorite bit of ridiculous news across the past week.
Hey, you know who would say, I don't know who killed Tupac? A man who killed Tupac. We have not ruled out that Jim Mora is the one who killed Tupac.
You know, and then it was funny because there was another comment or discussion post on the biggest mysteries in college football history. And I think this one may be a fun contender for that. But we, as always, we'd love to hear from you. So if you want to chat, we'd love to have you up here. Hey, let's see here, Boston Aggie, joining us early. We'd love to hear from you. What's up, man? Feel free to hit the unmute button. It's in the bottom left. Sometimes it's tricky on the Twitter app.
What's up, guys?
Hey,
what's how up? You doing?
I'd say pretty good. I'm out here in South Carolina on a short vacation on Folly Beach. It's a nice place.
Nice, nice, very nice. I'm up here in Texas. My Boston accent, Boston Aggie.
What part of Texas you went tonight?
I am in Denton, up by Fort Worth.
Ah, yes, Denton, home of the Mean Green.
Damn right.
UNT.
Absolutely.
So what's on your mind?
I honestly don't know. I kind of pressed request. I didn't think I was going to get in and talk. So
no, I hear you. We usually we always welcome people up, and that's great. So, well, I got to ask you, who's your team then? Are you a Texas A&M fan? At
oh yeah, I've been a big A&M fan for a while.
No. How are you thinking the team's looking this season?
Man, I'm optimistic. I'm not going to blow smoke up your ass and say, yeah, we're going to win 12 games or anything. I'm just looking to build upon what we did last year, you know? You know, make short strides towards where we want to be in the future. I mean, we've never been that program that's going to, you know, play for a natty every year. I just want progress year over year, and maybe someday we'll get there.
As an A&M fan, what would you call as progress for the season? Because last year, y'all beat Alabama, ended up with a very strong season overall. But for you to consider this is an improvement for this upcoming season, what's your definition of an improvement for Texas A&M?
Well, I think where you really got to start is a 10-win season, play in a New Year's Six game. Because, I mean, we played a New Year's Six game in 2020. But we didn't get that Ole Miss game, so we only played 9 games. Or we only played 9 regular season games, so we finished 9-1. To have, like, you know, national championship hopes, I feel like winning 10 games is a big first step. And playing in, you know, we just signed a number one class. very good, a lot of hype around it. But now is when you really have to, you got to build on that. You got to show progress. You got to develop the guys. And for me, my gauge would really be 10 wins in a New Year's Six berth, at the least. That's obviously, there's circumstances that exist in there that if you don't reach there, I mean, you got to take it as it happens. But if I had to quantify that into one thing, that's probably where I would bring it. 10 wins, New Year's Six.
Assuming you've got a 10-win season, that's going to put you at 2 losses in the regular season. If you had to pick those 2 losses and say, I am okay with these 2 losses being the losses, you look at that schedule, is that a Alabama and pick your poison out of the SEC? Is that what is that in terms of the 2 losses that you think would be the okay losses?
Yeah, I think Bama is definitely one of those teams that, you know, we caught lightning in a bottle last year. We played a really good game all throughout. And I mean, I haven't seen a team play like that against Bama in a long time. But yeah, we're going to Tuscaloosa this year. You know, infamously tough place to play. So I feel like Bama is that one that, you know, no one really expects you to win. And on that, I just have a tough time thinking that we're going to breeze right through that schedule. I think if I had to guess a place that we slip up, I would guess either Arkansas or Ole Miss. Although I do kind of lean towards Ole Miss, because when we played them last year, there were times where we didn't even look like a football team out there. We didn't even look like an SEC team out there. I mean, they ran through us for periods of that game. That Arkansas game, I feel like we can make a lot of improvements over last year's performance in that game. But as y'all know, Arkansas plays us good every single year. So I guess Bam and Ole Miss would be what I would say.
Yeah, and Arkansas is good. I mean, of course, for those who aren't familiar, it's going to be the conference opener. At that interesting series they have at AT&T Stadium in Arlington. I know, you know, I'm curious to see how the Miami game goes, only because there's questions about what this is. Obviously going to be the first season for the coach at Miami. So that game in I guess the third game of the season for the Aggies and hosting the Hurricanes is going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to that one. I mean, App State, you can't look past them. I mean, no one can. I mean, they proved to the universe, you know, over a decade ago now that you can't look past them. But I think really the Miami-Texas A&M game is going to be a fun one to tune into, at least for neutral fans anyway.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that game's a really good thermometer for where Miami is right now. And next year, because we play Miami again next year in Miami, that's going to be an even better thermometer to gauge Miami's improvement year over year. I mean, I don't expect us to lose to Miami, but hey, it's college football. You never know. Crazier stuff has happened. And you're right about App State. I mean, you overlook one of those teams, they'll sneak up on you. But I really like that Miami series. It's going to be fun.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. It was great hearing from you and just getting some of your thoughts on this upcoming season for Texas A&M.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. Love what you all do.
Yeah, man.
Thank you. And enjoy Denton while you're up there.
Well, you better believe I will.
The Paris of the Metroplex. Hey, Juwan, it's great to have you back.
Hey, how you guys doing? Sorry.
No, it's all right. How are you doing?
Doing all right tonight.
So what's on your mind this evening?
Did you see the headline about the Nicholas Yamalava? I think that's how you pronounce his name. That just signed with Tennessee for $8 million.
You know, JD, I'm going to deflect to you on the name pronunciation, but SRS, I know you want to chime in real quick.
Allegedly signed for that.
Was it alleged?
I mean, he's from Southern California. The lawyer who put the deal together was from Southern California. California is one of the few states that allows high school athletes to sign NIL deals and still play high school sports, you know, put a few things together and you can, you know, get out your jump to conclusions, Matt, but nothing official says that he was the one who signed the big NIL deal.
Right on. There's a few more kids from California that I've seen that have signed NIL deals. There's mostly quarterbacks that I've seen. Only thing that I see that's pointing towards him is that they had a gentleman's agreement with the team. So whoever it was already in agreement to commit to the team. That when I was going through it, I just used the process of elimination. I looked at the states that allow high school kids to sign NIL deals, which California is really the only football state that allows it. So I looked at a couple top players. It could have only been him or Malachi Nelson that I would think that could like get that kind of a deal right now. The other guy is a quarterback that Arkansas is actually recruiting, but he has another kind of weird name, but he's a high-level quarterback. He signed a deal for about $55,000. But other than that, I haven't heard about any other high school kids signing any deals. Jaden Rashad is the other kid's name that's a high school quarterback from California that signed a deal right now. Jaden Rashad, he's a high-level quarterback. Arkansas has actually recruited him. So that's how I know a little bit about him. But if that's the path that college football is going on, man, I don't really like the direction of the sport because it's starting to be – first we had the A&M $25 million deal. Then we got this kind of gentleman's agreement, per se, what they're saying, with this $8 million deal. What are we going to see next? Because when I originally seen the story, my mind was like, Arch Manning. But I don't know. You know, they're keeping his recruitment and what he's doing so tightly sealed, we don't really know much about what's going on with that. So – I just hope
I think eventually we're going to hear what some of the details are on some of these deals. I think there's too many people who are interested and too many folks out there who would know and potentially just be irritated at the amount of money or maybe jealous or who knows and potentially leak some of the details. So I'm hoping sooner than later we hear one of these sweet deals. Or I know when the commitment announcement was made, there was one of the more popular comments was someone's going to get fleeced eventually. Some big booster is going to end up, I don't know, sending money to the wrong place or you know, probably not. They're usually more sophisticated financially than that. But I'm going to be curious, especially if, you know, they're high school kids. Everything could go wrong. That can go wrong. I mean, people, there's athletic talent, and then there's, you know, roll the dice, there's, you know, brains, there's, you know, maturity, who knows what could happen. And I'm just waiting to see if that ends up going negative. Although the funnier thing was just watching Tennessee fans react. I mean, one of my favorite was Yes Lando, a Tennessee fan, and his reaction was all caps, "The check didn't bounce, baby." So, you know, I mean, it's exciting time if you're a Tennessee fan, but yeah, the rumors of $8 million is striking. I mean, eventually we're going to have to find out about it. I mean, if it's above board, you know, you got to eventually file something, I imagine. What do you think, JD? Serious? I keep thinking you keep on being serious.
I'm just thinking that if I'm a high school player and I'm like 17, how aggressive do I get on the fact that I don't want my parents to co-sign on the contract?
Oh, are you saying like to keep them sort of out of their fingers out of the pie? Kind of what you see with child actors trying to emancipate themselves from their parents?
No,
sort of thing?
No, straight up from a legality thing of a minor signing the contract. If you want to have some flexibility in there and just be like, you know, sorry, you can't enforce it, you know, decided I wanted to change the terms. I'm a minor. I was a minor when I signed it, so sorry, guys. You know, that kind of thing with players that are wanting to bounce back and forth between schools.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm gonna probably assume the type of person who's going to be able to put together a contract like that may be a little more sophisticated to that potential trick. But who knows? I mean, I think if a couple of big boosters get burned, you're going to get some university presidents being pressured to get the NCAA to create some kind of regulation on it. But you know what? I'm enjoying this wild ride. But I agree. I agree with what Jawan said. I think it's changing the very nature of what we see as college football fans out there. When at least until we get a little more. I mean, the wild rumors are one thing, and I don't know how pervasive they are outside of kind of the hardcore fans. You know, the ones like those of us who are on a college football talk on a Tuesday in March on Twitter. You know, we are the ones that will hear and probably read like, oh man, there's some crazy money being put out there. But I don't know, once we get closer to the fall, when, you know, more casual fans start paying attention in summertime, how much of this is going to come out and how much of this is still going to resonate with them positively or negatively. I'm curious.
This is still a sport that paid Charlie Weiss nearly $25 million to not coach. If anybody is being up in arms that a 17-year-old got $8 million, they're already in the wrong sport to begin with.
So is that, by the way, JD, is that I am Oliva? Is that how you say it?
I believe so.
Okay. Then that joke did work. Because I saw one of the initial jokes was I am Oliva for Tennessee. But, you know, I mean, anyways. But, go ahead, Juwan.
I'm sorry, I was on my headphones and it keeps clicking the speaker on and off.
No,
but yes, I'm just not for, like, for a prime example, we had Quinn Ewers, who was rated the number one quarterback and the number one overall player in his class over there at South Lake Carroll. Just because of the money, he skipped out on his senior year, enrolled into Ohio State for barely a semester just to gain the $2 million or whatever the amount was on the NIL deal that he got, and then transferred to Texas. But that was solely a money move. And I'm saying, do we want the money to compromise the integrity and what they choose a university over? You're supposed to choose a university over the tradition or just wherever you wanted to play or being a legacy player, whatever it was. They won you over on a visit, but now it's like, we have this $2.5 million. Are you going to go over here, play for a possible nothing, or come over here, sign this $2 million deal? It's been going on for a long time, but it's in our face now. Whenever Bryce Young got that $2 million without even playing a snap, you know, I just knew we were going in a different direction. I think it's going to start happening more.
Again, I'm going to point y'all into the direction of this is the same sport where Lincoln Riley abandoned a playoff team for a $100 million plus contract at USC. Brian Kelly abandoned his team that was heading into a New Year's Six game for an LSU contract worth over $100 million. And Mario Cristobal left Oregon out of nowhere to go to Miami for another lucrative contract. If we're getting upset over players taking $2 million to get out of high school a little bit early and then just transfer between two blue bloods, I think we're looking at the wrong sport to be criticizing. Overall, I think the huge thing for me with like Quinn Ewers being able to transfer where he wants, make his bag, like that is a kid doing financial finesse, and that is something to praise, in my opinion, more so than to criticize or say, oh, this 17-year-old didn't make the right decision. This kid is now a college freshman, one of the most touted recruits in college football history, has already secured a bag, and he's still playing at the same time that he would have out of high school to begin with. But now he's added another year of a college weight program. He's added another year of college coaching, and he made himself a more valuable recruit overall in the process.
Plus, I mean, one of the bags he secured was from a kombucha company, and come on, you kind of got to know that it's a risky maneuver there. If you're giving that much money to a college kid, an 18-year-old, to endorse your product, you know, fad and fad go hand in hand in that case. My opinion.
Are you calling kombucha a fad? Are you really going there?
Yes, I am.
I don't understand it. It has not gone away for years. Every year, that, I swear, that shelf just keeps getting bigger. But I'll set that aside for a sec.
I think the more interesting possible, like, underlying note here is, you know, the signing of this quarterback or commit from this quarterback out of California for Tennessee basically removes them from the Arch Manning like sweepstakes, right? Because, you know, obviously Peyton went to Peyton didn't go to Ole Miss because his brother Cooper had diagnosed with the medical condition at Ole Miss as a wide receiver, so he wasn't going to be able to play. So instead he goes to Tennessee, plays under their offensive coordinator, David Cutcliffe. Cutcliffe then gets a head coaching job at Ole Miss, and then Eli goes to Ole Miss, which is his father's alma mater, to play under Cutcliffe. So when, you know, they've had strong ties with Cutcliffe, afterwards gone to Duke to train there in the offseason. So there's ties to both of those schools. Alabama's in the running. Texas and Georgia are also supposedly in the running. But Tennessee apparently is now not at all.
So now the question is, how much was Arch Manning asking for? or is that even a factor in it? Maybe they just wanted to. You get boosters, they get anxious. Maybe they just said, just pull the trigger on that guy. I don't know. I'm curious.
We're going to learn like 10 years in the future that Lane Kiffin was behind the $8 million just so he could secure Arch Manning by making sure anybody else went to Tennessee.
I like it.
Hey, Juwan, stick with us. But Kevin, we just let you up. I saw your request. Again, anyone who wants to join us, we always love hearing your voices. What's up,
Hey,
Kevin?
How's it going? Yeah, yeah.
Good, how are
good,
you?
Good, good, good. Excited to be here. Tuesday, college football. This is great. yeah, actually, kind of just wanted to touch a little bit more on what Juwan was saying. And it was kind of like, you know, he said it's going to maybe jeopardize the integrity of where these recruits want to go. No, I think it's a little early to say that, but it's very possible that that's going to be the case. I mean, I think in the Quinn Ewers case, it's like he's playing at Ohio State versus Texas. No, he can go no matter where he wants. So I don't know if that's the best example. But Arch Manning, what you were just talking about too, like, you know, I don't know if he's still in the running for Tennessee. I feel like if you look at Quinn Ewers, he just transferred. He was the number one recruit ever, just transferred out of Ohio State after 1 year. I just think like a lot of this NIL stuff and the transfer portal combined like really opens up to like anything. And this is now we're seeing a year-round recruiting process that's like very much in your face. And really nothing is solidified. So it's going to be interesting the next, like, especially this year and the next couple of years to see how everything plays out.
Well, I got to ask, what's your best friend's name on the line?
who are you talking about, Juwan?
No, you're, we heard your dog.
Oh, my dog. My dog's name is Maple. Gear.
Oh, that was great. Yeah, no. I mean, the first time he barked, I was like, that's almost like a sound effect. That was like not even a real dog. That was like the dog sound effect being pressed, and then he kept going. That's
he's
great.
Really excited about the Twitter Spaces as well.
Well, that's a good hit. That's why we know he's an awesome dog. Oh, man. So, 1 second. I apologize. JD, did you want to add something?
I mean, I want to hear more about this dog. So tell us, what kind of breed, how old?
Yeah, chocolate lab, 10 months old. He's a maniac all over the place. But
my father-in-law has a big old chocolate lab, just turned 11 years old. And I've seen that dog since it was a puppy. And that thing... I mean, especially at 10 months old, I can imagine you've got your hands full right now.
Yeah, he's all over the place, barking, as you can imagine.
So, Kevin, who's your team, man? What are you looking forward to this season?
Clemson. Clemson's my squad. So, you know, I think that's going to be interesting, too. You know, I got Cade Klubnik coming in, and then also DJ. Like, that quarterback battle, I think, is going to be interesting. And I think, ultimately, Clemson's a pretty big question mark, in my opinion. There's a lot of unknowns. Obviously, you got, you know, new defensive coordinator, new offensive coordinator. And so I think it's going to be an interesting season to see how they respond after last year.
Yeah, I mean, losing and losing big names on the coordinator positions, I mean, I mean, but at the same time, it's Dabo. You want to think that this is going to be a big test for him. I mean, I think it's – I don't think we'll see. If there's a drop-off, I don't think it'll be significant. But perhaps as people get used to new faces. But,
I mean
–
Yeah, I think also they may have taken a little bit of a stab at our downfall in recruiting a little bit. You saw like those three guys from IMG Academy just completely dropped off after Venables went to Oklahoma, and now they're going to all different places in the SEC. So I think like recruiting, they're going to have you know a pretty big bounce back as well and start making their names, especially in the South.
Do you think that losing Tony Elliott to be the head coach of Virginia? Is that going to be a case where it might be a little bit of addition by subtraction, or
It might be.
My friends who are Clemson fans were not happy with him last year, or really even the year before. For the most part.
Yeah. No. I think it's going to be hard to say, but it may be. I think the rep that they've gotten, especially Tony Elliott, is like they're becoming a little bit stale. So it could be a little bit of an addition by subtraction, which is good. But the only thing to counter that is like Dabo promoted from within, so it's more probably the same old scheme. Maybe there's some new line of thinking, but it's still familiarity with their offense.
Well, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing Clemson and Georgia Tech play in that, in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium for the kickoff. The Chick-fil-A kickoff. I always forget what they name it.
Yes, I forget what it is. But I'm pretty sure that's a Monday night game, like I think, right?
Oh, Oh my gosh, you're right. I think that is. That's the those are always huge games. I mean, it kind of stinks if you have to go to the game, but I mean, those are always, are always like the big game. I remember, several years ago when it was the Ohio State Virginia Tech rematch. I just remember this is, I guess, inside baseball on it, but logistically for the website, we totally forgot that game was going to be as huge as it was. Cause that was when Ohio State had only lost to Virginia Tech the previous year. And cause it was the only game on a Monday night, cause NFL hadn't started off yet. The website nearly crashed on us trying to moderate it. And we were like, we should have broken that one apart. And now they've created a more robust system at Reddit. I mean, we don't do that stuff, but I just remember how big of a deal that game was. And I think this one's going to be pretty big.
Yeah, I think so too. Conference games to start off here. Yeah. Yep.
Well, thanks so much for joining us, Kevin. We appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah. So, again, if anyone wants to join us, have thoughts, whatever, we'd love to hear from you. I saw there was a request earlier, but I guess they dropped off, and that's cool. We try to get to everyone within a reasonable amount of time. I've been meaning to ask you, JD, and I know you have a lot of strong thoughts on this, because obviously Colt Brennan was in the news again as they were celebrating his life. Do you want to talk at all about that?
Yeah, sure, would love to. As we all know, Colt Brennan passed away about 10 months ago now at this point, but they finally held a celebration of life for him over on Waikiki Beach off of the Duke's restaurant area. And they held a formal Hawaiian paddle out for him, which is a very honorable, very Hawaiian traditional celebration where they take the ashes out on an outrigger canoe, paddle it out into the ocean, and scatter the ashes out into the waves. Beautiful, beautiful ceremony. I know that we've tweeted about it. We've shared some of the video just a very moving celebration to celebrate Colt Brennan's life, who was a very loved figure in Hawaii sports and in Hawaii life in general. There were multiple head coaches who were there, who spoke. There was Brent Brennan, who is Colt's cousin and the head coach of the San Jose State Spartans. He was out there. Timmy Chang, current head coach of the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors. He also spoke at the celebration of life. June Jones, the legendary head coach from Hawaii, who ran them during the Sugar Bowl run, also spoke. It was a very beautiful ceremony and a very fitting one for someone who embraced Hawaii so strongly and embraced everything that the culture did, everything that the university did, and everything that the fans loved and embraced as a culture out on the islands. And I thought it was an incredibly fitting send-off to put his body at rest.
JD, I'm just curious. So for those of us who aren't familiar, what is a paddle out exactly?
Yeah, so a paddle out is you are going to take the ashes of somebody's deceased body and you're going to literally paddle it out from a beach to go scatter it amongst the waves so that it'll wash up on the shore and be a part of the beach and part of the islands. When that happens, you're going to have a kind of traditional ceremony, whether that's a funeral, celebration of life, but you'll traditionally wrap those ashes in tea leaves and you'll have a big display. You're going to have a very big floral arrangement around all of it. You'll do your prayers, your eulogies, your whatever you're going to do at this celebration of life or funeral. Then you'll load it up into an outrigger canoe. And you'll have probably about like 6 to 8 people in that outrigger canoe paddling it out. And then anybody else who has attended the service, they get out in a catamaran, a boat, a boogie board, a surfboard, stand-up paddle board, whatever you can, and literally paddle out, and you'll form a giant circle around the outrigger. And traditionally, there will be a Hawaiian priest or clergy member who will do prayers as they scatter the ashes. They'll traditionally play conch. Sometimes they'll play ukulele. They'll do music and singing, and they'll actually lay the ashes to rest and actually let it return to the island to permanently be a part of Hawaii.
That is an incredible, incredible experience. My goodness, I think hopefully a long time from now, but that would be one heck of a way to be put to rest. And I mean, fitting for someone who is as meaningful to not just Hawaii football, but the entire, the entire state for that incredible run he had there and coming back for his senior season and really just, making Hawaii a really incredible place for college football, for everyone, really. I mean, I enjoyed watching, Colt Brennan teams. Those were some of the wildest games in the WAC at night, I'll tell you what. And I guess I should just go ahead and do station identification. So this is, again, RCFB Talk 24. My name's Bob Akairi. I'm joined, as always, by JD and Sirius. One thing I got to ask you, Sirius, because you are a resident Vandy fan. Today, Vanderbilt announced a rebranding. They have shown off some new logos. And my favorite moment is, I'll ask you, what's your thought on it? They've created what seems like a new V, or as one of our members, the Wet of the Irish, did. He translated it, or actually wasn't Wet of the Irish, pardon me. It was a Baylor fan record reviewer translated the new logo into its Arabic numeral 5.
I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, come on. Well, okay.
It's bad. It's so bad. It is legitimately awful. And I mean, I was admitted at a time when they were like transitioning logos and everything and moving to the Star V. So, I've seen various iterations. It is the bastard love child of Villanova and half of Xavier's.
That's a great description. That is, if you haven't seen it, that is exactly what it is. It's like someone took Villanova and Xavier or just cut off half of Xavier and made it Vandy colors. But
they somehow managed to make a bland logo like disgusting. I don't even know how you do that. Logos are just, they're uninspired, they're tired, they look bleh. And then they took the old, like the Star V, and they tried to take the new logo and put it over a star, and they made it look worse. And then the biggest tragedy of all is they got rid of the old academic logo, so that now we all have one kind of similar visual brand identity. And
You guys the have old, a new motto.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. They did a lot. The old academic logo was a V with an oak leaf on it. There are lots of oak leaves on campus. It's a National Arboretum. We have lots of squirrels, so acorns and everything. Like, it's heavily ingrained into Vanderbilt. Students loved the oak leaf logo. They got rid of that, so they have the same V, except this time they learned absolutely nothing from any of the graphic design in academia and especially college sports over the past, I don't know, 20 years. They gave it not only a gradient, because, I mean, who doesn't love that from word art? They also gave it a bevel, technically three bevels. It's atrocious. And then, as you mentioned, they also gave us a motto, because for some reason, you know, like 150 years in, we need one of those. And redesigned the academic seal, so it's now no longer what's on my diploma and everybody else's diplomas. It's just impressively stupid, and yeah.
So Vanderbilt's never had an academic motto. Like, I think most universities do.
No, we never have. That's why, well, so somebody shared the new academic logo today, and I'm like, did I miss something? Like, when did we get a motto? And the answer is literally today. They announced it.
What is it? What is it? Is it in English? I mean, they're not going to use an ancient dead language just because they want to look fancy, are they?
It's actually in German, which is, you know, the scientific language of the future. Wait, no, that's Stanford. Stanford decided to do that. no, it is. It's actually in Latin.
Oh, very relevant. Very relevant for today's undergraduate.
It is. It's Crescere Ade. It's been a while since I've taken Latin, and we did not focus on those kinds of pronunciations, which means dare to grow.
Oh my god, it's a marketing term. They took a marketing motto and actually stuck it in into your academic logo. Oh my gosh.
The academic logo is, it is... It looks like, you know, when you buy some products, like, there'll be, like, a gold foil sticker on it. You know, like a, kind of like a freshness seal type thing to, you know, like, oh, look, this is high end. It's, you know, it's like a black and gold sticker, and it's, like, holographic and everything, you know, shiny. Yeah, that's what it looks like, pretty much. There's, it wants to kind of, like, look kind of like a globe, and there's a star, and... We use, and the weird thing is we, the font that they use, well, not font, but, you know, like the design of the V for the logo, it's not the same as the V that's in the actual Vanderbilt when they spell it out. So we have two different Vs on the same logo because of this decision. It's just, it's terrible.
I'm just amazed at that. They took it through some kind of focus group, you'd assume, and that's what they came up with. Or it was probably designed by committee. When something
focus group to hell.
Yeah. When something flies bad, it's designed by committee for sure.
Actually, if you count the V logo as its own font, the academic logo has three different fonts on it. Because the Latin is in a sans serif and the university name is in a serif font. So yeah, it's a shit show. To put it bluntly.
Well, I mean, and if anything, it points out, you know, and this is more, maybe this is a bit, I think every fan base can kind of relate to this. It makes you appreciate a good logo or timeless logo more than anything. I mean, you never mistake the Texas logo. That thing is unmistakable. The Notre Dame.
Unless you're looking at a logo that looks an awful lot like either the Texas or the Tennessee logo because they had a shared marketing agreement basically splitting it at the Mississippi.
Indeed. Or, you know, I think, you know, it's so funny too. The Michigan M is pretty recognizable. Obviously, Ohio State's got a pretty good O. I think a more recent one, Oregon, I mean, like it or hate it, the more modernized Oregon O is pretty recognizable. You know it. Apart from any other university logo.
I saw a comment that said that they thought the administration maybe was trying to, you know, mimic go for the same or end result as like Michigan or Northwestern, where it's just that single highly recognizable letter for the entire brand for academics and athletics both. And this ain't it, Chief.
That's a theory. I mean, Vanderbilt certainly, I mean, you know, academically is an excellent university, so maybe that's what they were going for. I mean, and maybe they're trying to make themselves distinct, but I don't know. I thought the star was pretty solid. I mean, it wasn't the best logo, but at least it was clear. But I mean, again, I was shocked when they decided to change it and change it to that. And
well, I noticed that they'd actually kind of done something similar over the past year or two with the sports, because, you know, obviously the baseball teams have been like the shining example of Vanderbilt athletics for several years now. And they kind of moved away from doing like the Vandy Boys branding. It's still there, you know, it's still their Twitter handle, but it's not as, from a graphic standpoint, it's not as visible. And they've kind of, you know, all of the university Twitter accounts for the different sports all use a variation on the same theme. So at the time, there's the star V over top of whatever ball or, you know, equipment is associated with that sport. That's their, you know, their avatar. And they were definitely trying to move towards a more uniform appearance, which in some cases it works, but like with baseball especially, almost every school has a baseball-specific logo that they use. And a lot of times it's kind of like a throwback, retro-y type logo. Like Clemson, you know, speaking of them recently, like theirs is a C. You know, it's like a C with a little bit of a tail on the end.
Absolutely. That's not... Actually, as some people know, there was at one point a trademark battle between, even though they generally have a kind of detente between South Carolina and the University of Southern California, and it was actually over specifically the baseball logos that both schools were using, not their other sports logos. Their two baseball logos, both, I've heard it described as a pregnant SC, where it's kind of like the S is part of the interlock and then the C is bigger on both of them. That was the one time the two USCs actually went to legal blows against each other. And then Southern California won that particular fracas. And then over the years, South Carolina started to lean itself in a different direction with its colors and even its acronym. Like, I don't know if it's stuck, but they tried to call themselves now U of SC, because they found in marketing research, even within the state of South Carolina, let alone outside of it, they had lost a significant amount of ground on what people were associating with that particular acronym. But
I think they just need to go whole hog and fully embrace Sacarlina, and, you know, Sakerlina. Just that's what everybody says anyway. So just go with it. You know, turn into the slide there.
I mean, if Shane Beamer said, "Let's do it," you know. I mean, give him a little more time. I mean, okay, he's, you know, we have been on this show singing his praises over and over again, and
granted, he keeps coming up.
He keeps coming up, exactly. So we become
it's insidious.
Like, we keep being the Shane Beamer fan club. Just because, yeah, he keeps coming up, and he had certainly, probably, arguably one of the best seasons of a first year coach last season.
Okay, if we're going to go back to the well of repeating topics, how about Sam Pittman and his two Arkansas Razorbacks that are now like a statuary fountain in front of his vacation home?
Hilarious. It's actually one of the topics I wanted to get to. So if you guys haven't seen this.
The best part of it, real quick, though, is that when he put it on Twitter, this, like, the first comment that I saw underneath it was, "I was out on the lake at a fishing competition, and I seen them yesterday. They look great." Whoopig.
Yeah, and he took a picture of it. And he took a picture of it and shared it on Twitter. Yeah, this thing, it's great. It's a pair of Razorbacks, and one of them, I believe one of them shoots out water. Or is it both of them? I can't quite tell, but it's cute. It's reasonable. It's not like, 'cause there was an insane Razorback-themed statue a couple years back that some fan made, and I forgot the whole story on it. I think it was just a sculptor who loved to make kind of wild, like, animal drawings, but it was like a acid trip version of a Razorback. But these two look really authentic. Like, they are clearly designed to look like real Razorbacks, and they're sitting and facing a lake. And Sam Pittman, being kind of the coach that he is, he thought it would be fun to have these. So, because when I first heard dual Razorback fountain, I thought it was going to be like some kind of two-headed, or maybe like, you know, I was waiting. I thought it was going to be a lot more surreal, but no, it's two Razorbacks. It's kind of neat. I mean, again, I appreciate a coach that that would do that. Oh, and yeah, it's in Hot Springs. That's a nice area. That's not far from. Not far from Fayetteville. I've been out to Hot Springs. But
when I heard two Razorbacks, I was expecting them to be more like a Blucifer type pose. You know, something more aggressive, but you know, they're just kinda like standing there and water comes out their mouths, like trickles out.
Jenny, were you about to add something to that?
Oh, I was just about to say, I love the fact that this was at his Hot Springs address, his vacation home. For a man who makes millions and millions of dollars, is at his dream job, he's decided that his vacation home needs to be about 1 hour away from where he works.
He just loves the area. It's a pretty area out there, I'll say that much. I've been to Eureka Springs. I've been to, well, Branson. Okay, I went to Branson once, and that was enough for me. I'm sure it's great for some people. Not really me. I'm more of a Vegas person, and all I could do was think of the Simpsons joke that where somebody says Branson is Vegas if it were run by Ned Flanders, but it wasn't quite my style. But I went down to Fayetteville for a game and drove through a lot of these places, and it's lovely out there. I'm just gonna say that. So to all our friends out there who are from Arkansas, particularly Northwest Arkansas. Nice countryside that's out there. And by the way, again, RCFB Talk 24, if you want to talk college football or really any topic, feel free to send in a request. We'd love to hear from you. We always do. We've been talking quite a few topics tonight. Let me see here. You know, so we like to talk about the previous week, and it's been a little while, but St. Patrick's Day came and went. And one of the more amusing things I thought was Oklahoma State football through their Twitter account throwing some shade at the Fighting Irish. With their tweet was, "Happy St. Patrick's Day to all who celebrate. We hope you have a better day than this leprechaun." And it's just photos from the game that they played with the Fiesta Bowl, right? Yeah. So with the horrified look of the leprechaun in the background as Oklahoma State players are wreaking havoc. So another interesting topic too was, you know, which two fan bases are the most alike. That one also was a popular discussion among our fan base, the various fan bases here. I mean, one of my personal favorites among those that were mentioned, and we'd love to hear yours. I mean, you know, a lot of friends said, you know, well, I think this one was accurate. Notre Dame and Michigan, you know, one user, that's right. I grew up a massive Michigan fan and can say with some authority that we're just funhouse mirror versions of each other, which was, of course, retorted by another Notre Dame fan, Hasso Grande. I hate that this is true, but it absolutely is. Personally, I think USC and Miami fans are in a way similar. Maybe not exactly. I think perhaps Miami – the Miami fan of that we always think of, the most cliche Miami fan, might be a little more extreme, but I think that's why I've always thought it would be a natural rivalry that never existed. A natural, if there was ever a national conference, Miami and USC have to be in the same conference because they both have very similar fan bases. They're both big teams in cities that don't really care unless you're doing incredibly well. And they have the same kind of mentality. Two private schools that are they're too good for other people. An attitude. I think those two would be a good mix. How about you guys? What do you think? What are two fan bases that are similar in your head?
So I can say this from just observing different cultures, different games, watching people do similar cheers. I'm not going to elaborate on this one, but Oklahoma and Tennessee.
It's the fight song, isn't it?
Listen, but between the two of them, they know a grand total of 2 songs. But
hey, I'm a USC fan. We also know 2 songs. Which, by the way, is part of the reason why I believe Lincoln Riley would have no problem transitioning from Oklahoma to USC, because it's another team that all they do is play the same fight song over and over and over again. You know, he just wanted to have a different song over and over and over again.
I was actually going to say Tennessee and Nebraska. Nebraska's had it rougher lately, but both of them desperately wishing for the 90s to come back.
Yeah, well, that was definitely, I mean, and yeah, maybe they should move to Portland. Sorry, that's a really old Portlandia joke. Man, goodness. The dream of the 90s is still alive in Portland.
One that I would say is going to be similar, but in a funhouse sense, I would definitely see a lot of similarities with Wisconsin and LSU of all teams.
Oh, those fan bases. Oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, I would love to be the bull that hosts them, because you're going to be out of alcohol. You're going to be out of alcohol before, like, when they announce the game. Like, forget the game day itself. After bowl announcement, somehow all the booze is going to be sold out. Those two fan bases together in any venue, that would be an exciting game. And, you know, I mean, part of the reason that I love going to non-conference games, part of the reason that bowls are enjoyable, you know, you get passionate fan bases, but they generally don't have any beef with each other, because they don't really have the same kind of interconference, you know, annoyance or rivalry. It's always fun. That's why I always encourage people, go to a game that's a non-conference away game, or go to a neutral mm-hmm. site game. They're not as exciting, I agree. But if you can go and see another big team, do it. It's fun, you know, because at that point, everyone's just happy to be there and watching football rather than some of the more hostile environments, if that's not what you're into.
Right.
I would throw Wazoo in there, not from a team success viewpoint, but from a fan base standpoint in there with LSU and Wisconsin, in terms of fans who can drink the town dry.
I would also agree with that, but the similarity that I would throw with Washington State instead of a Wisconsin or an LSU, throw either of the Iowa schools in. I would say that Washington State and Iowa State are a pretty relatively like even fan base if you're looking for an apples to apples situation.
Read my mind. Was that an Apple Cup joke?
It was not, but I did definitely see that game happen in the Alamo Bowl a couple years ago. I believe it was Mike Leach's last bowl game that he had with Washington State. I want to say in the 2019 season. They played in the Alamo Bowl together, and I will never forget the announcement that we had in the press box. At the start of the third quarter, they were out of Busch Light in the entire stadium.
Now that is classic. You know, I will say this though: Iowa State has already, I think, found its best friend when West Virginia joined the Big 12. Because those two, I mean, I love the fact that the fans have immediately dubbed it the Riot Bowl because of the tendencies of both student bodies. I mean, obviously, West Virginia fans best known for burning couches and celebrations to the point where they made it a felony in that in the Morgantown. But and then Iowa State, I don't know if they just say VESHA, but it's an acronym for all of their colleges put together. They eventually canceled the event because of how off the rails Ames, Iowa would get during this weekly, I guess, originally academic celebration, but turned into just, I mean, the chaos that would erupt in Ames every year. They canceled it not that long ago. I want to say within the last decade. But I'm also old, so everything feels like it was 10 years ago, and then somebody tells me it was 25. But it was both of those two fan bases have gotten along swimmingly as conference mates. And I think they're far enough apart that it's easy for them to be amiable, even though, you know, it's not quite as hostile of a rivalry. But, yeah, so again, let's see here. Jay Bass, I apologize if I'm mangling that. I saw you wanted to join our conversation. We'd love to hear from you. Unmute yourself.
Hey, guys. Appreciate the time. How just answering the question, how about Texas and Florida? You know,
I like that. I think that one.
I think, you know, and I'm biased, so y'all bear with me, but every year, you know, we fall into the same sort of hype that we have, you know, obviously the recruiting region, we have the university to be proud of, but it never quite, the culture is always off a little bit. And so, you know, you can see that obviously on Saturdays too, but I thought that was a pretty good comparison.
It's such a good comparison that can you clarify which team you're a fan of?
I'm a Texas Longhorn fan. Born and bred.
See, it works for both of them.
Say that again.
It worked for both of them. It could have gone either way.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, same story, different year this year. You know, you fall into the hype. Everybody's undefeated for the spring, and you start feeling lofty. And that's one thing Texas fans is kind of known for, is kind of that, you know, that false bravado a little bit when, you know, we haven't really won anything in a long time, but our passion for the game is definitely there. But, you know, just got to put it together.
Yeah, I heard that Sam Ellinger's Heisman Trophy is in the mail. It'll be there anytime.
I hear you.
You know, it's funny. We were just talking about our, you know, how fun it is to go to a game against a program where your team isn't, you know, in conference, and going to Austin for a game, you know, when USC played Texas, that was a great example of it. It's fun, you know. There wasn't really any hostility, you know. It was a great time for the Longhorns fans, I'll tell you that much. But even as a visiting fan, I thought that was real fun. That was a real fun place to be. I enjoyed my time down there.
You know, the funny thing is that Texas kind of has a little bit of not a little bit, but there's some fair weather fans out there. And but to your point, when you do have those big matchups, Texas fans can show up and they can be loud. They're not really known for being loud, but I think that's one of the underrated things. If we could just get back rolling, we're going to the SEC. A lot of those premier matchups is going to be, you know, a great atmosphere.
Oh, yeah, I can 100% attest to that. And I think it also says a lot about the culture change that Chris Del Conte and some of the guys in his department, whether that's Drew Martin or Caden Hyde or any of the guys that he's brought in to really revamp the culture and make people turn from that fair weather fan into an actual dedicated fan. The experience in DKR is night and day of what it used to be 5 years ago. It's night and day of what it used to be 10 years ago. It's an incredible environment when everything is clicking and working. And it's been a really strong testament to see when it's actually rocking. I can remember very vividly back during the 2018 season when they ended up playing in the Cotton Bowl, ended up being Georgia. It was the season finale. I want to say it was against Kansas State or West Virginia or someone else like that. The entire stadium just lighting up with phones organically and singing along to Bon Jovi and just being the loudest I've ever heard it in many, many years. It's an incredible environment to be in when that attitude is there. And I think it's been an amazing job by this administration to change some of the apathy that was kind of there in the early 2010s.
Well, I think it's been about an hour. We generally typically go for only an hour. So I am going to go ahead and we are going to go ahead and wrap this up. We wanted to thank all of you for listening. You know, my name is Bob Ack. We have JD. We have Sirius for the first time in several weeks because of various vacations. Thanks to all of you who joined us. Thank you, Jay Bass. Thank you, Juwan. Thanks to the rest of you who've been here with us. We hope you have a great rest of your week. We try to do these every Tuesday. We've been pretty good about that since April. April. Wow, well, my brain totally went off.
December.
December, yeah. Whoa, man, April, yeah. Anyway, have a great night, everybody. We'll talk to you all next week.